everybody, and welcome to Two Stories of Tinseltown. And we have a wonderful, wonderful guest today. But first, I want to thank John. He is my co-host for today, and I am thrilled. Hi, John.
Hello, and hello to everyone listening.
And he is in Cincinnati, and we have a very great guest for you. I'm so thrilled to have her on, Kathy Garver. Hi, Kathy.
Hello, Anne. Hi, John.
Hi.
And hello, everybody out there.
In TV land and podcast land. We're so happy to have Kathy. I read her book and I reread it. Surviving Sissy, My Family Affair of Life in Hollywood. And I have to say, I enjoyed it a lot. It was a very good book. And you really did a lot of stuff.
Well, I started working when I was so young. My mom actually started me at the Meglin Studios, and you read this in the book, and that is where Shirley Temple was discovered.
Yes, and you were only 3, right?
Yes.
When you started?
Right.
To me.
And we did singing and dancing on the Great Big Trine Theater in Los Angeles, where they used to have some of the Academy Awards.
Yeah, they
would present great big operas with elephants going across the stage. And it was a little tiny girl that's sharing those same grandiose stages. So it was really fun.
You didn't mind, huh?
Of being acting and singing and dancing?
Three?
I thought it was terrific.
Really?
Well, you don't know anything at 3.
Yeah.
It's so much. You know, it's the impressions and, you know, what you're feeling and seeing. I think that you don't get the intellectual impact of what you were actually
right.
doing.
Because you wrote
so
a book
what
about,
we did.
I'm sorry. Go on.
So it was, you know, it was just a fun thing for me to do. And my mother always said, when I started actually acting at 7, you know, and I would go back to school, and she'd say, well, now, don't tell everyone you were on a movie set or this and that. She tried to keep me as normal as possible. I don't know how well she succeeded, but that was her goal.
Did you tell any of the kids? I'm sorry, John.
Oh, no, it's okay. It's a little hard with 3 of us. I'm sorry if I interrupt anybody. When you were starting out that young and so on, did your mother attempt to have you work in projects when you weren't in school, or did you have a tutor on set for some of those things, or how did that work?
We always had a tutor on set, and that was California and state and I think federal regulation primarily California, that you had to have 3 hours with they call them welfare workers, which were actually the teachers also looking after our welfare every day. And
so many of your
up. I'm sorry.
Well, I was saying, so you were pulled out of your regular school life, I imagine. So therefore, the children that you went to school with would know something was up, right?
Well, yes, but we weren't supposed. I wasn't supposed to tell.
But did you tell us
but,
now?
You know,
tell us.
Yeah,
you
but,
did. Tell.
Yeah, I can say it now. But we'd have to get the assignments from the teacher.
Yeah,
and my mom would say, you know, well, she'll be out for 3 days or 4 days, and what assignments can we give to the tutor? So the teacher knew.
Yes.
I don't think that it's, you know, a big secret that your primary project that you're associated with is Family Affair. But when I was looking through your other work, your earlier work, you know,
amazing.
Long before Family Affair, is almost like it reads like a best of 50s television almost,
and
you know. The people that you worked with, the shows you worked on. It's rare, I would think, rare is the person that would work on shows like, just for example, Private Secretary with Ann Southern, but then Our Miss Brooks with Eve Arden. So those are like in a similar vein, sort of a movie star who came to TV and had her show. You're on both of them, you know, and then later on you did both Dr. Kildare and Van Casey, so you nail both of the really hot doctor medical type shows.
Yes, I wish I had been a little older at that time.
Oh, yeah. And also, then you did a lot of Westerns, which you said you loved.
Yes, I worked a lot. And when I did a couple weeks ago, I went to Kalamazoo, Michigan, mm-hmm. and I will do this also in Los Angeles, and I'm going to do it up in Seattle. But they have radio recreations, and I thought it was so interesting to me when I was in Kalamazoo that we did a radio recreation of Our Miss Brooks. And I played Our Miss Brooks.
How cool.
You know, and a lot like Our Miss Brooks was a radio show before it became a television show. Mm-hmm. And so it was here I was starting out on the and did a television show as Our Miss Brooks. And eons later, here I'm playing Miss Brooks in a radio recreation. So it's, you know, it's very interesting the way life works sometimes.
It is.
And when I'm sorry. Here we go again.
Go ahead,
When you were doing these early shows and they were early TV, but they were popular TV. Are the memories of being on set and with these people kind of seared in your brain, or does it become a blur because you were young? It was so far.
I have been blessed and cursed with a very good memory. I can remember even all the way back to standing in my crib and saying, "Well,
no way,"
and crying. Yes, I have those images in my mind. So when I did these early television shows, I was very impressed and could recall so many of the things. I mean, I can just close my eyes right now and see pictures in my mind of a particular set. You know, or that my private secretary that I did, or Sergeant Preston of the Yukon, and they're very vivid. That's why it was interesting for me to write that book, because I had such great recall. And then if I couldn't recall something, you know, you look at a picture and that's instantaneous, or you hear like a thread of music and that brings the recall back. And of course, there are the photos.
Great fun.
You worked on a show with him that starred a man that I happened to really like a lot in his prime. I don't know what he was like when you worked with him on Sheriff of Cochise with John Bromfield.
Yes, one? I do.
He had been a very, very handsome young man. He swam with Esther Williams in a movie or two and so forth. And then that show was a success for him. Do you have any memories about that?
Well, I remember that I played an Indian, and you can't do that
today. Right today. No.
You have to be an Indian,
right?
Isn't it something called Pretty Walker? Pretty Walker.
Yes, right. Yes, exactly. And I at that time I had very dark hair. I have brown eyes, and I have high cheekbones. So I played three or four Indians, Travels with Jamie McFeeter, with Kurt Russell, and and that Sheriff of Cochise I played. And again, I can remember I wore this turquoise dress with a silver Indian belt on, and I can see myself there, yeah.
You know what's fascinating about that is that all of your memories of these things are in color, of course, but we didn't even have color TV. So we only saw any of this in black and white. We only saw Ann Southern happens to be another person I like a lot.
Her eyes were
so fluid, you know, that blue, and they were just such fluid eyes. And of course, Eve Arden was a very colorful person too, but you got to see these folks in the flesh in color. We only got to see the black and white versions of them on these shows.
That's a very interesting perspective and insight. Yes, that's true. And Ann Southern came back and she did an episode of Family Affair.
Did she?
Yes.
So many things are intertwined. Yes.
I want to ask about your movies. I am so impressed with those. First movie you did, Night of the Hunter.
Ah, yes. And, I remember lots about that, too. Again, the sights and the sounds and the smells. I was Sally Bruce's double, because she was just six and had never done any work before. Mm-hmm. And I was eight, but I was little. You know, I was little for my age.
But you're
a star. I had been working a lot. Yeah. And I had been dancing and singing since I was three. And so I did most of her scenes, practically all of the ones in the boat going down the rivers and up in the haylofts and running and stuffing the money in the doll. I don't want to be a spoiler. If anyone hasn't seen this, one of the best horror films, it's rated that you know, was ever made.
I loved it. Do you remember the actors? Do you remember Robert Mitchum, Shelley Winters? Shelley Winters. Peter Graves, small part.
Yes, and Peter Graves, I met again at a celebrity ski tournament. We did that movie together.
Did you win?
And I was a pretty fast skier, I must say. And he was just a delightful person. Very, very nice. He's Jim Arness's brother.
I know, I was just going to ask you that. Do you remember anything about Robert Mitchum or Charles Laughton?
Oh, yes. Robert Mitchum was, you know, this really tough guy. And he was kind of scary in person, even. I know he was playing a scary preacher, but to a little kid. Yeah. And the first scene I did was when we were in the cellar and trying to hide from this crazed preacher man, Robert Mitchum, and he comes yelling and screaming and breaks forth a tether for all these bottles that go crashing to the floor. And so my first impression was, boy, is this a scary guy.
I think he's
Charles
so
Laughton, on the other hand, that was his first and last directorial job, because the movie did not get great reviews because it was so ahead of its time.
Yes.
And yeah. And but he was very thoughtful, and he got out of the kids what he wants. I have this great picture, and maybe I think I may have put it in the book, of him cutting out paper dolls. And we were all around the table, Billy Chapin, and he was showing us how the money that were in, that was in the doll. Here's another spoiler alert: how to cut out the paper doll. So he sat down and was like, really one of the cast, and got into it because he was such a wonderful actor, you know. And that just bled over into what he knew, how to get out the emotions of a person and even kids. So.
How about he put Lillian? So much style,
oh, he
style
was wonderful.
Into the film.
Now,
you know,
it's
for an actor, you'd think he'd focus more on the performances, which I'm sure he did. But the visual of it all was so impressive.
It was really beautiful.
We had an incredible cinematographer and a great art director, and they worked very, very well together.
So Lillian Gish was this wonderful old granny character that took in all the little children.
Spoiler.
Was she anything like
children.
That?
Well,
what did I spoil? She's
I'm
just
kidding.
An old lady living on the river. But was she warm with the children off when the cameras weren't rolling? Was she like
absolutely.
That?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That she was very much that character off camera.
Neat.
And she loved the kids and was nice to us all. And she, every day at 3 o'clock, she paid to have snacks and everything brought to the set. So we were eating salami and crackers and cheese. And
yummy.
And she was very generous of herself, of her spirit, and of her heart.
She sounds like a doll. How was Shelley Winters?
I didn't see too much of Shelley.
Yeah, she got killed pretty fast.
She got killed very early.
Are you asking us to believe that Shelley didn't come out when the snacks arrived at 3 o'clock?
You're terrible.
Yeah, because she was already off the movie by then.
Yeah.
She was already killed. And
bad
so she
job.
Wasn't She wasn't there. I'm sure she would have been.
You then did Moses, the Ten Commandments.
The Ten Commandments. Yes, the Ten Commandments was fabulous. As a matter of fact, I'm going to this Comic-Con this weekend to Omaha, and I did this Omaha Film Festival about 3 years ago, and they made a commemorative stamp with the Ten Commandments with Charlton Heston and me on it.
Oh.
And it's a really a
How
wonderful.
Cool.
Yes,
it, they did an original painting first by Nicolosi, who is a wonderful artist, and that is what they used for the commemorative stamp. But Ten Commandments, I mean, it's on every year. It was interesting the way they colorized it. But.
I love that movie, and I have it on DVD, and I watch it every so often. I was going to say religiously, but I decided not to.
That would have been good, John.
But it's just got everything. You know what I mean? It's got an epic story. The cast, you could die for.
Oh, my God.
It just goes on and on and on. And just the way it was like, I know Cecil B. DeMille attempted to make another movie after that. Wasn't it, I think, The Buccaneer or something, but he couldn't quite get, you know, he was not feeling well because he had an episode during the Ten Commandments, like a heart issue on out in the desert, had to take a little time off.
I don't know about that. We shot, I shot all my scenes at Paramount.
Oh, okay.
Where they were building the Red Sea and
it's like his pinnacle, you know what I mean? He just, it was his big... Here It Comes, and I just think it's movie making at its most magic.
Well, he's fabulous. What can you say about him?
Yes, and you look at that movie with all our green screen today and this and that and the other thing, and I think that the effects were absolutely wonderful and believable.
I agree.
Maybe because they were more organic, and you know, they used Jell-O for the parting of the Red Sea.
Boy, that's a lot of Jell-O.
You know, it moves. Jell-O moves. Soft-set Jell-O. I've written a couple cookbooks. Soft-set Jell-O. Those aren't a couple of my recipes. But
when the water turns to blood, you know, at the the palace, that's so vivid. You know, computerization wouldn't do anything to improve that when that red blood comes out of the fountains.
I agree with you.
Well, wrote a really good story about you and your friend in Charlton Heston at the parting of the Red Sea.
Oh, well, yes. That is a story that I do speeches and speak a lot in inspirational and motivational and all of that. But I do have a wonderful story, but it's too long because I think we're just on for 15 minutes, right? It takes a while, but it's I do have a very funny story, anecdotal story, true story as I was there. So
true story from Tinseltown. We told you.
One other movie, Kathy, that you did, a key movie, was The Bad Seed.
Oh, yeah. Love that movie.
Many, many fans of that one, too.
And Patty McCormick has remained a friend of mine.
Oh,
and she's great. And there is a neighbor that I have. Every Mother's Day, she shows The Bad Seed. And it's camp almost now.
Well, it is,
because I think because they took it directly from the stage.
Yes.
And so they didn't, I think, really kind of get it down to the film level.
Right.
But that's what made it so scary and memorable and camp now today.
She was fabulous. Was she a nice kid?
She was. Yeah, I remember, and I have pictures of us going on the swing together where we were shooting at Griffith Park, where we were shooting some of the scenes.
You guys got cut out. It was Shelley Fabre's, you and Rhoda Penmark.
Yes.
Bummer.
And I said, Mom, what happened? She says, well, you know, you were so good that you were showing that Patty, so they couldn't have you in the movie. Don't you love mothers?
Mothers are fabulous.
The
they are. They really
they
are.
They always have the right thing to say.
that was a shame, but I love that movie. But why don't we get a little bit into Family Affair, because that's a biggie for you, and you were in your third year at UCLA. You got the call. Mm-hmm. I read your book.
Yes, I'm there. Yes, that's very good of you. Thank you,
yes. And then,
appreciate that.
You have a hair disaster. You go in. You still get that part. But you were how old? So I'd say 20. And Sissy was what, 15? Supposed to be 15.
Right. Right. I told them I was 18.
That was
for
smart.
A long time. They even gave me a big party when a 21st birthday party.
Oh, no. They never found. Well, now they'd find out, but then no, they don't. They wouldn't be scouring for the fact. Good for you,
right?
Did you? It was a really sweet show. You know, I watched a few on Hulu the other day, and it's also on Amazon Prime. I think the first year, and I loved the cast. I love Brian Keith. So any good stuff you can tell me about him, because I think he's great, underrated. He's just really
smart. Yes, and he was wonderful. And actually, in a couple months, I'm accepting award for him, posthumously, obviously, for the Silver Spurs, because he was, what was wonderful about Brian, he was just this macho man, but he had this real sensitivity and, yes, and great heart, and he absolutely, he loved kids. And so that, it can be an unbeatable combination.
Yeah.
And actually we lobbied to get him a star on the Walk of Fame, which also, I made a speech for him, and Shelley Fabres did as well, because after Family Affair, he went and did, it was called The Little People. And then there was some things that went on, and then they changed it to The Brian Keith Show. But unfortunately, it only lasted a couple years, and he loved Hawaii. He just, he loved the water. He lived in Malibu when we were filming, and then he lived in Hawaii, and then he married a Hawaiian.
That's what I thought he did, and then he had that, his daughter, the poor thing.
Right.
But he was really good to you guys. Uncle Bio. I got to ask you about Uncle Bio. They both said Uncle Bio. Did they ever say to the kids, Uncle Bill, or did they just love Uncle Bio?
Well, Anissa, who played Buffy, Anissa Jones, she got it as Uncle Bill. But Johnny, I think, maybe at the very final year, but he was saying Uncle Bio, Uncle Bio.
You know, you even write that in your book.
During the first 4 years, yeah.
Uncle Bio, the cherubs.
Right.
I am looking. How is Mr. French? You guys called him what? He was...
Sabby.
Yeah. How was Sebastian Cabot?
What was interesting, because all of the people, I think, in the show really loved their families. Sebastian had three kids, and Brian had kids, and that came over into the show itself. And so I did spend some time with him. He had a different style of acting than Brian. It was hard for Sebastian to learn lines, but he would go and he would study them all week and on the weekends and get it word for word and then go with a dialogue coach so he had him exactly right. Brian, on the other hand, would come in and say, well, what do we have today? I said, okay, let's go. So it actually worked very well, I think, because of the differences, and it made it more dynamic.
When you landed that role and you were getting your chemistry together and everything's coming together, and it was certainly a very tender show, certainly especially at the beginning, but you all were establishing your rapport with one another. And then did he have a heart attack? He was gone for quite a while.
Yes.
And replaced by John Williams.
Right.
Were you scared about really everything, you know, because...
No, but he was.
I bet.
He was his part. He tried to get better as well as he could.
Was there a sense of insecurity about how the show, you know, that you'd just begun, really? I think it was only 8 episodes in or something, wasn't it?
Yes, he hurt his wrist. And the thing is, the way we shot very differently. And Don Federson, who was the producer, started this method that... Federson method with my three sons. And as you had alluded to earlier, some of this, like Ann Southern or Eve Arden coming to do television, that was one thing, because movie stars really didn't do television. Mm-hmm. But the way that Federson lured them to do the show was that not only would they be the star, they would only have to work 3 months out of the year, plus... The big thing was they would get a part of the financial pie of the show. But what that meant to us is that we would be doing scenes from maybe four different shows in one day.
That must have been hard.
All the scenes that Brian was in. So coming back to Sebastian, even though his surgery only, you know, was like a week and a half or two, but that covered eight episodes. So that's the name of that tune. There is a true story from Tinseltown.
Oh, wasn't
now,
he?
Now, when you were... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm just going to say... what. He was supposed to be Mr. French's brother, right?
Right, Nigel. Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't
as
nice.
And he was great. You know, John Williams was in Sabrina. He played Audrey Hepburn's father, and he was just so elegant and wonderful.
I loved him.
I know. He was just, you know, different from Sebastian, but, you know, he really was quite charming.
When you were on that show and these different people came on, for example, you know, Myrna Loy.
I just saw
from Blondell.
Wow.
Ida Lupino was on a couple of times.
What? Heather Angel.
Were these people that you knew? I mean, were you aware this is someone a little bit special than anyone else? Or
oh yes, and I thought we were so blessed to have these wonderful stars come to our show.
Yeah,
and they were great. And Ida Lupino was wonderful, and she was so they wrote her in. She came back and did another episode.
Wasn't she supposed to be Mr. French's babe?
Yes, exactly.
It's all love.
Yes. Yes. You know what? It's 4:30, and I'm actually having a realtor come over, so I thought this was going to be actually 15 minutes, but it's been so delightful talking with you both.
Yes, we didn't get to everything, boy, oh boy, but thank you so much for giving us the time. And maybe
yes,
you'll
it was
come
a
on.
Very big pleasure.
Yeah, maybe
you.
You can come on again and give us the other half hour. How's that?
Well, yes, that sounds good. In the meantime, people can go on my website at KathyGarver.com. And they can pick up my first book, which is the Family Affair Cookbook. And then my second one that you, Anne, have, that is Surviving Sissy, My Family Affair of Life in Hollywood. My third book is Ex-Child Stars, Where Are They Now? And this year I'll have out Holiday Recipes for a Family Affair.
Yum, yum.
So there we go.
Yes. So I will link that up for you.
A delight to talk to you both.
It was wonderful.
And I'd love to
talk
back.
To you. Please do.
Thank you.
Because we have lots of more questions. Thank you so much, Kathy. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Well, are we continuing the show a little bit?
Yes,
or no?
We should. I want it. The big scoops this week, because we were just talking about him last week, is that Tab Hunter died.
It was awful because, you know, the man wasn't some invalid living on a hillside somewhere. He was out and about still actively pursuing a life.
He was amazing. And he was walking home with his partner of many years, and he just kind of fell over. But, you know, if you got to go, that's the way to go. Because
I do agree with you.
You know, he wasn't in a hospital for years or anything like that, but I felt
sad.
No one
should ever suffer and languish in a bed with tubes and the whole bit. I completely agree. But on the other hand, like I say, he was still
vibrant,
out and about. He went to see Boys in the Band on Broadway, met the cast backstage. He was at
something
else.
When was this?
Else.
Recently?
Just in the last, you know, couple of months. And he was somewhere else as well, you know, just going all over the place. So,
how old is he?
He was 86, but he did not look 86.
No, my God. I fell in love with him in the documentary. I thought he was so charming and so adorable. And Rona Barrett was there. That's when I wrote her, and she was so kind. And I'm going to write her again and see maybe if we can get her. But
well, I never even got the timing of the interview with Kathy. I had so much more because I didn't know how long we'd get her. But
nor did I.
So. I can't believe that we spoke for a half hour and I never asked her about The Big Valley, because that's one of my top five favorite shows of my life. And
well,
she was on there with Barbara Stanwyck.
I had no idea it was only going to be a half an hour. Believe me. I had no clue.
But it was good. We learned some fun things. And you know, it was.
She was nice. Was and, you know, if she wants to do like the other half hour of our questions, that's okay with me too. So there.
I was looking over some of the kids that that guest starred on Family Affair because, you know, she's one of the. She kind of has a group that oh shoot, you know, an advocacy kind of thing that she does about with child stars and the troubles and stuff. And, oh, you know, Aaron Moran was on Family Affair a couple of times and Life Garrett was on Life Garrett.
I don't remember that, him.
Somebody
he was a
who's
cute
had
boy.
Some trouble.
Is he still
but
alive?
Little Gretel. Oh yeah. The Little Gretel from The Sound of Music was on maybe three or four times.
Yes, and I think she was on the Brady Bunch.
She was.
Wasn't she on the one with Cyrano de Brady? She fell in love with
Greg. I think
so,
yeah. She was on there twice, and she was really pretty.
Very pretty.
Really pretty. And you wouldn't know her unless she looked because her hair was like bleached blonde, although I think it was natural to tell you the truth. She was blonde and she was very, very pretty and had humongous...
knockers.
You know.
Yeah, I think that's why Peter Brady fell in love with her. That's when Marcia donned
the wig. But you wouldn't recognize her from Gretel.
She's come a long way, baby. Yeah.
These hills really were alive. She had on a Brady Bunch.
They
but,
were.
No, I think I saw her in Family Affair. I think she was in the playground when Buffy and Jodie went over there to play one time, if I remember right.
She was in that.
So,
Eve Plum was in that as a very sick and dying child.
So it's kind of neat because when she wrote that book, ex-child stars, where are they now? She'd worked with so many because they'd always truck in kids, you know, to be on Family Affair to round out the cast for storylines and stuff.
Well, I wanted to ask her about Anissa Jones and, you know, I mean, it was just I wanted to ask about that. And,
but, you know, I'm sure that she's been asked that 755,000 times.
I know. I know what happened. She was eight. She got 70 grand because remember the Coogan Law where parents used to steal all the money.
Yeah.
Uncle Fester. And then.
He was a guest on Family Affair also.
Was he really?
Yeah.
Who'd he play?
Oh, I don't know. I just know that he was on there at least one time because, I was looking stuff up.
I can't believe all these great stars weren't. In her book, they have a picture of Ida Lupino. I think she was not Ida Lupino, Myrna Loy, and I think she was wearing like a maid hat.
Yeah, she was the she played a maid named Adele, who I guess came to serve for one of their fancy dinners. You know how Uncle Bio. And it turned out I think she was either a cook or something like that, but anyway, she didn't know anything that she was doing. It was like Amelia Bedelia or something like that. Everything
oops,
went
how
wrong.
Clumsy of me,
you know. Yeah, she was all hapless and making errors and causing problems. It was a nice little part for her to kind of break free, do something funny and hapless and different and stuff.
Oh boy, did I love her. And she was so good. She could do drama, comedy. Mm-hmm. She was fabulous. I love Myrna Loy.
I'll never forget she had a on TNT back when TNT was still a viable channel. Mm-hmm. They would have these sort of biographies, you know, of people, and hers was Myrna Loy. So good to come home to.
Oh,
yeah. So nice to come home to, or something like that.
Yes.
Because she was such a desirable wife that you know, wouldn't stay late at the office, quote unquote. You couldn't wait to get home to Myrna Loy.
Yes.
She was just a neat lady.
She was great. And Heather Angel was in that. And I just saw a movie with Heather Angel, which was something with a bunch of women who volunteered in the war, and she was there, and
she was on a lot on Family Affair. I mean,
she
like
was
quite
Mrs. Havisham or Miss Havisham. Mm-hmm. Who knew?
A fellow nanny or a fellow somebody
exactly.
like that he met.
He'd sit.
She
in
was
the park.
Wasn't she in Lifeboat too? I thought she was in Lifeboat that Alfred Hitchcock directed.
Yes.
So yeah, there was a lot of neat people.
Yeah, there were some great people.
And I didn't know about this until today because I've never really seen the end of Family Affair. But Nancy Walker turned up for a long time towards the end.
Yes, Kathy has that pictures. She has all these pictures in there, and there's one of.
I don't know why. I don't know if she was kind of like, you know, they were just adding someone new to sort of mix it up or something. not sure really why she was on.
Oh, you want to? But you what?
Sorry, I was going to say, you know, I did that thing about Buffy on my
website. Yes. Oh, my God.
There's a, I think it's probably still on YouTube. I think you might have told me once that you watched it, but when she was a presenter on the Emmy Awards.
Yes.
And just watching her come out with this, and I think little Johnny Whitaker was there,
he
too.
He was there as well, and Mr. French.
Savvy.
And they, Sabby, baby.
He brought out this little platform for her to stand on so she could reach the microphone and announce, you know, and it was Milburn Stone from Gunsmoke that won. And oh my gosh, it's just gut wrenching.
And it is.
She's so cute. And then she goes to leave, and Sebastian Cabot points back like, don't leave without taking your little step stool with you. She has to like go back and
get
it.
Don't you think somebody else could have put it down for the poor kid? Come on.
Yes, I do. But she just, it's such a heartbreaker, you know? I mean, that was one cute little girl. And I don't like cloying children that are so cute, you know?
Yes, but, and the annoying know-it-all kids where you want to like choke them, you know? Like,
she was different, you know? Yeah. She really was. So.
She broke my heart. So. Like I said, I watched a couple of Family Affairs a couple days ago, and, you know, here she is. She was 8 when she started, 13 when it ended, and she's still carrying Mrs. Beasley. Because I think she was supposed to be 5 when it started, but you had to see her face. I mean, my God, she looked so sad. It made me feel so sad for her.
It was a very forlorn show at the start, you know. And I mean, how happy can it be? Their parents just died in a car accident or something. I get it, but man, it's just like they have. It's almost like they've got the script as a little harp, and they just keep plucking every string.
Yes.
Every once in a while, till you're just sitting there, 50-year-old man. And I was on the treadmill. You have to be careful. I was at the treadmill one day, and it was on, and it was they were out at Aunt Fran's house in Terre. He always called it Terre Haute. Uh-huh. It's really Terre Haute.
Oh, that's Terre Haute, where they were Indiana. From. That's where they were
from.
Yeah,
and then Aunt Fran wanted to keep them. And that was Louise Latham, who was an incredible character.
Was she Marnie's mom?
Marnie's mom, yeah. And so, you know, I had to change the channel because I can't just cry on the treadmill.
No,
you know, and I'll never forget this one time I worked at a country club, and there was this saute cook, or, you know, like a sous chef is what she got. She'd kill me. She'd absolutely beat me with a fry pan if I caught her. But she was the sous chef, and she had a very tough personality, and you better not mess up in that kitchen, or you'd have a pair of tongs reach in and get your eyes out. And she came in one day in a particularly rotten mood, and I looked at her and I said, what's the matter? Because I kind of, after a couple years working there, I get along with her and everything. Uh-huh. And she said, I'm so pissed off. And I said, what's the matter? She said, because Jose, her husband, she said, Jose broke my washing machine. I had to take my laundry to the laundromat. And I thought, okay, well, that's not very fun, you know. And she said, so I'm sitting there folding my towels and folding my socks. And they've got Little House on the Prairie on the TV. And she was just saying it that venomously, you know. And I'm thinking, well, okay. And she said, I'm sitting there trying to fold my laundry, and I got a Little House on the Prairie on TV, and it's the one where Laura goes up to the old hermit, and she started crying.
That is a heart wrencher.
She started crying in the laundromat, and that's why she was mad, because everyone saw her crying while she was folding her socks.
Oh, dear.
Because the Little House on the Prairie was on. And that show, every single episode ended with, like, this, you know, flood of tears. The music kicks in.
Oh,
it's just like right on cue.
That's sad music to tell you. You should cry now.
So funny, though.
The saddest one was when Patricia Neal starred, and it was a two-parter. And remember?
Too hanky.
Yes, Radom. What was the kid's name who was little kung fu guy?
What?
You remember the movie Kung Fu? TV show Kung Fu?
Yeah, David Carradine's show.
Yeah, and there was like him learning from the master.
Oh, is it Luke?
Radames Peru or something, like a really weird name.
Oh,
a young boy. Anyway, he was on it, and he had a younger sister and brother, and Patricia Neal was dying. So it was awful, you know, two episodes. And she's trying to find people who will take her children. And that was a holy heartbreak one, I got to say. It had two episodes, I sobbed and sobbed.
Well, the show, I mean, I loved it, right? But it was so sadistic. Like, one time they had Alice Garvey with this baby up in the top floor of a burning house.
Oh, Mary's.
And they didn't make it.
Mary's baby. I know.
Really? And, you know, just there was always locust or something horrible happening. And, it was such a, what do you call that? Misogynistic when you, or not misogynistic, hello. I'm sorry, masochistic, you know,
yes.
like Charles Ingalls liked to revel in being oppressed by the elements, bad people in town, whoever. Remember the pilot when Carolyn Ingalls was alone with the girls and an Indian showed up at the house?
No, I never.
Oh, help me, Jesus. She opened the door and an Indian was standing there and came in and like started taking stuff. And it was... It was petrifying.
Was he checking out her scalp and see what's going to happen? How horrible.
Thank God she wasn't combing her hair for the 7,000th stroke like she used to before she came back.
Or Mary, who always brushed her hair.
Watching that the other day. I was making something in the kitchen, and the one was on where Mary's blind and her husband's blind, but then all of a sudden he got his sight back and she didn't.
Yes.
And so they were different now, you know, and that's a big adjustment. So.
It caused quite a brouhaha between them. You know what? Have you watched any 70s movies since we've yacked?
Well, I watched a little one last night. Now, it wasn't very good picture quality, so I was, like, kind of straining, but it was crazy. It was called The Secret Midnight Caller.
Ooh.
And, of course, I couldn't resist a title like that, you know? So it was 1973, and it was Arlene Golanka.
Was this, Golanka. How long have we not heard that name?
But you know who I mean, right?
Oh, Arlene I know Golanka. Arlene Golanka. But she usually played comedies.
She did. She was on Mayberry RFD, but she was in this movie, and it was directed by Jerry Jameson, who happened to be the man that directed Airport 77. And now I know how she got that big plum part in Airport 77, because she wasn't really a movie star, you know,
no.
But he must have worked with her on this and other things. And so anyway, she came home and she's got this bag of groceries with like a dozen eggs sticking out the top. And this kind of creepy man is out in the courtyard of her apartment complex. And she goes inside and starts getting these horrible phone calls with all this nasty, terrible stuff. And, we can't hear any of it because it's a 1973 made-for-TV movie.
Of course.
But instead of, like, hanging up the phone, she hurls the phone to the floor as hard as she can, and the receiver, too, and just starts squealing and screaming like she is wont to do.
Stupid.
And but also in the movie is Robert Reed, Hope Lang, Sylvia Sidney.
Wow.
It took forever for Sylvia Sidney to show up. I was kind of disappointed because I find her quite interesting. That craggy, gaunt, you know,
she smoked a lot of cigarettes.
Exactly.
Yeah. And she was a tiny little thing. Did you ever see Death at Love House?
I did. It's been a while.
Yes.
Kate Jackson, right?
Kate Jackson.
Is it Robert Wagner?
Robert Wagner, Sylvia Sidney, and Joan Blondell was in it, and also Dorothy L'Amour.
Yeah, it's been too long. I actually have that on DVD down in the basement.
You should check it
like
out.
It was like a dollar, you know,
it's
and
like
I know I watched it.
Very
but it's
weird.
It's been too long.
Cheesy,
Kate
but
Jackson
I loved
did
it.
A surprising number of TV movies. You know, she really did.
She did one with Gloria Swanson and her hunky boyfriend, Edward Albert Jr. Hubba Hubba. I thought
you know,
was
she.
So
I was reading about Dark Shadows the other day because remember I went to the half price book sale and got 40 books or however many it was, and one of them was this book all about soaps, and it was written in 84, I think, and it talked about Dark Shadows, and apparently she was in acting school when she was cast on Dark Shadows, and somehow because of the school she was at, she wasn't allowed to take speaking roles in things or something, so they made her Ghost. So that's why she never spoke for like the first big long stretch that she was on the show. I don't know the details of how or why. It sounds crazy.
That's but weird.
She was forbidden by her school to speak.
Well,
in a role.
I just started, like last year, I started watching Dark Shadows. And I'm just up to the part where the Leviathans, and I have not yet seen Quentin in, you know, 70s threads. You know, I've yet to see him that. But he told me he loved wearing the frock coat.
Now, you know that show has a very heavy reputation for having, like, 65% gay people on it. You know, it's just almost everybody involved.
I know. Yes.
And so David's lucky he escaped with his reputation intact because, you know, with his mutton chops and his little tight 18th century pants, you know.
Very handsome. But yeah, Joel Crothers, who was adorable. And he was, I had Catherine Lee Scott on, and she was in the beginning, and she did a lot of this. She was great. And she's kept alive a lot of Dark Shadow stuff. And she was a great guest. And Joel Crothers was her best friend, and he died of AIDS in the 80s. And he was just so adorable. And Jonathan Frid, well, we knew. What was his name? He was a hoot.
Barnabas?
Barnabas was gay.
Collins.
But I'm thinking of the guy who played Phoebe Wallingford's husband.
Yeah. Langley Wallingford.
Langley. But he, what's his name? Louis Hayward or something like that? Louis somebody. And he used to have pool parties because he lived in Fire Island. And he had, there was a really great pic of him. And, what's his name? And Jonathan Frid in their like mankinis.
Louis Edmonds.
Yes.
Was his name.
He was a hoot.
But yeah, it had a pretty strong, you know, reputation for just having a lot of gay people in the cast for whatever reason.
Yeah. Well, soap operas in general have a lot of gay guys. My ex-husband used to work, you know, he was a lighting designer on All My Children, and I met so many of the guys, and I would say, at least 80% were gay. At least, we'll put it at 80%. But, for you soap opera fans, I'm kidding. They were all hetero.
I find all those soap operas that, you know, say from like the early to mid 60s up through the 80s, I just find that whole period of soap operas very interesting. I'm always picking up old books. First of all, just the clothes, the hair, the way they all looked, the way they all, you know, but just something about those old triangles, you know, the suffering, the manipulation, you know, and then each show kind of had its own sort of grand dame character. You know, you had your Phoebe Wallingford, and then over on the other side, you'd have someone else. For some reason, I'm drawing a blank, but you just had the grand dame kind of character, like Lisa from As the World Turns or whoever. There's one that kind of stood out.
Who's the queen bee? Yeah.
And just how they, when you think, I'm an actor. I mean, I'm not a professional actor, but I've been an actor for 25 years. But to play one part 3, 4, 5 times a week for 30 and 40 years,
amazing.
The way some of us do. It's just very interesting to me. It's almost like having a double life.
Well, look at Susan Lucci. She started when she was 20, and she was, I think, 60 when it ended. And I have to tell you, true story from New York City town. Susan looks incredible. I sat right next to her. And yes, I have to say, allegedly, she got road work, but it was the best road work I've ever seen. And my ex-husband used to see her before makeup in the morning, and he said she looked incredible.
And I just always wished that she wasn't quite so thin, but I know she had to be, you know, she felt she needed to be.
She's too thin.
But it was really, really thin.
Yeah.
You know, her mother on the show, Mona was her mother. That was Van Heflin's sister, yes. Frances Heflin. And she was a, the New York shows in particular had such great stage people.
They did. And they also had what it was like, you know, now soap operas are dead and, you know, everything coming out, you can watch so much stuff. But people lived for that, and always the Friday ending, boom, 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 you know, and then you'd wait till Monday to get the real boom of what happened on Friday. So that was really kind of cool.
I always think about how, you know, soaps originated at like 15 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. They were 15 minutes long. And then Erna Phillips decided that she wanted to make one 30 minutes long. And people were like, oh, housewives won't sit still for 30 minutes to watch a soap opera, you know? And she made As the World Turns, but she didn't increase how much story there was. She just made more reactions and chit-chat about the story. So you got like 15 extra minutes of just reflection on what was going on in that. And it created that incredible where the audience was just so invested in it because they felt like they knew these people.
Even and, you like know, then villains, they started like, you know, Susan Lucci when she was younger would get yelled at and called all.
And they just went on. I remember. Do you remember when Another World went to 90 minutes?
Yes.
For a while. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about how no one will ever sit still for 30 minutes to watch soap opera. And now it's like, then here comes 90 minutes of it. And then followed by Texas, which was like a spinoff. So that was another hour. I mean, no wonder the place was filthy. No wonder people didn't do their ironing. Dinner never got on the table. Curtains were dusty. The window was filthy.
I tell you, like they wouldn't sit still. People got so engrossed. It was really, amazing.
But there wasn't anything else to watch either. You know, we had three channels and maybe a UHF that showed cartoons. So what were they going to do, you know?
Yeah.
There's just too much now. Too many choices now.
Yeah. It's eeny, meeny, miney, mo, miney, mo, mo, mo. You know, it's not like you can do that anymore. Anything else we should talk about?
Well, no, I think we've pretty much killed it.
Yes, I think we did very well.
It was nice. You know, like I said, perhaps you'll get her on again. I feel bad if I prevented you from getting to the Anissa Jones situation.
No.
I was trying to come up with some different things, you know, that she'd never been asked before.
You did.
But
And it was a good one. So, no, I didn't really have to get to that. There were other things I wanted to ask her because true story from Tinseltown from Kathy's book, she dated the producer Don Federson's son, who played her boyfriend on the show. And he was, I think, 18. And at the time, she was about 24. And he thought she was a gold digger and way too old for her son. But eventually they did break up. But they used to go to Charlton Heston's house and play backgammon.
And you know, she didn't marry till she was 35 years old. And you know when she had her child?
No.
45 years old.
Wow.
45 years old. I was going to ask her about that. You know, not anything, you know, untoward about it, but just having a child that late. And of course, her marriage is successful. She's still married after all these years. And she got married in 81, so closing in on 40 years.
Yep. And she's lived in the house for 40 years that she's packing up and selling. Yeah. So
that's why she had to get off the phone, because if they're going to move any furniture, there's dust and stuff behind there.
Well, she said she had the realtor coming. So, yeah, really.
I'm just teasing. There's 40 years of stuff down behind the tea.
Yes. In the dear me.
But
sweep it under the rug.
I'm sure she's got a Mr. French or an Adele or a
somebody.
Mrs. Livingston. Somebody.
Havisham.
Mrs. Livingston from Eddie's father comes in to shove stuff around.
I wonder how
it's neat that she has kept a lot of the stuff, you know, and then obviously still speaks and keeps her hand in with all the different, you know, remembrances and awards, like she was saying, and things like that.
good for her. So I want to thank you so much, Kathy Garver, for coming on and giving us your time. And I want to thank my fabulous co-host, John Poseidon. And I want you to go to his blog, and you will L-O-V-E it. Tell us how they can get there.
Well, it's called Poseidon's Underworld, and you can just Google that, and it'll pop right up. And it's almost 10 years old next month,
it's
and
fabulous.
There's almost 700 posts, so you're bound to find one or two out of the 700 that tickle
it.
Your fancy.
You will love it.
And I just yesterday put up a tribute, in a photo tribute.
To Tab?
To Tab Hunter.
Oh, I got to check it out. Yes.
Who I dearly loved.
I fell in love with him in the like I said, the documentary. And also people, I mean, some of you people like me have mistakenly written Poseidon with a D-E and it's with an O. So I'm just trying to save you from that, because I'm so
it'll probably still come up by now, because it's, you know, there's not too much else. When you type in Poseidon's Underworld, you're pretty much going to, by now, like it or not, my site will pretty much show up. So
yes, it does. And I am delighted. So thank you. You ask great questions, and I always love to have you on. So thanks a zillion, my friend. You're great.
Well, thank you very much. Good luck with whatever comes next. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye.
There's got to be a morning after. If we can hold on through the night, we have a chance to find the sunshine. Let's keep on looking for the light. Oh, can't you see the morning after? It's waiting right outside the storm. Why don't we cross the bridge together and find a place that's safe and warm? It's not too late, we should be giving. Only with love can we climb. It's not too late, not while we're living. Let's put our hands out in time. There's got to be a morning after. We're moving closer to the shore.